Since we were talking about the fear of the Lord last week in church and worship service, and how it means both respect and fear at the same time, I thought it would be good, and since I mentioned this particular verse, to go into Proverbs 1:7. I know you probably have it memorized, but it's in the ESV. It is, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction." Now, this serves as the beginning point of what Solomon had as a purpose for the book of Proverbs. And it's not just Solomon, of course, but the Spirit of God directed him, superintended him as he wrote these words. So let's begin in verse 1 to see what he's attempting to accomplish. "The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. Let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance to understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles." This is, a passage that deserves a whole lot of study, but we can only do so much. And so we'll try to get through all of that as we think about this idea of the fear of the Lord being the beginning of knowledge. Now, this is the book of Proverbs' own introduction to its purpose and its nature. The contents of the book of Proverbs as a whole can be described as proverbs, which have two main, although quite different forms noted in the introduction. This all by itself lets us know that the Proverbs, or just the word proverb, is a word that has wider, perhaps more varied application than the English word. The Bible uses the word proverb a lot more broadly than we do, and it can actually refer to a prophetic oracle or an object lesson or a saying or a poetic discourse, you know, talking between some people, or a speech, and even other forms of speech. So it suggests something more intense, more vigorous, than just a straightforward kind of a saying. And that's what's interesting about the Proverbs. These Proverbs are described in verse 6 as being a saying or a parable. And that is not only a proverb, but a parable. So not only is a proverb a straightforward saying, but there's a meaning behind it that isn't so straightforward necessarily. You have to stop and think about it. And it is also indicative of the fact that the Proverbs deals with some really deep issues, things that need to be thought about deeply, and don't just take them at face value. I mean, I read a proverb and I have to start thinking about, well, it would be true in this case, but it wouldn't be true in this other case. What does it mean for this situation as opposed to that situation? And all those kinds of things enter in to your thinking as you're studying the Proverbs. So the heading, of course, attributes all of this to Solomon. And he, as the king of Israel, would be the person through whom these sayings would come. And he is also accredited as being one of the wisest, if not the wisest, of all human beings up to this point. And I don't know if that extends beyond, you know, his history, but up to that point, he asked for wisdom, as you well know, and God gave him wisdom, and he showed a great deal of wisdom. Now, there are ways in which Solomon didn't show wisdom, and that was in the area of his gathering of wives and actually not listening to the Lord about multiplying horses and other things that he wasn't supposed to do. But as far as these sayings are concerned, we're to take them as wise parables and proverbs, deep statements of wisdom and knowledge. Now, Solomon, King Solomon, is David's son, and Solomon is in a unique position to make the statements. If you look at Ecclesiastes 1:12 through 2:11, that'll back up what I just said. In a parallel way, the Proverbs 1 through 9 may have Solomon as their model. So these are things that Solomon would have been wise enough to live by, but, you know, there's another irony there. So the introduction goes on to state the book's purpose, and it does offer us, I would call, a glossary of terms right here in the beginning. And so I want to kind of express what each one of those means, you know, in a short little pithy way, not really any deep study, word study or anything like that. But verse 2 is where we will begin. This is going to introduce wisdom. And wisdom, of course, is practical know-how, or the ability to use whatever knowledge you have, whatever data you have, and put it into practice wisely, you know, in a way that you achieve what you're wanting to accomplish. It becomes a little more abstract, this word, wisdom, when it's concerned with theological type questions. The next is discipline or instruction, to know wisdom and instruction. And that word is definitely a word that can mean either chastening or discipline, and the two are not unrelated. So it is the disciplining that comes through this wisdom that keeps one moving in the proper pathway. So, wisdom's connection is, I think, obvious. But it is about knowing wisdom and instruction, which is the word yada. Know is yada, which means to have a deep experiential understanding. It's used, of course, of the situation where Adam knew his wife. I always use that because it's so simple. And it's definitely about an experience with wisdom and knowledge, a deep wisdom, knowledge, understanding, observation, learning about wisdom and instruction. So that's part of the goal right there. There is insight in understanding that implies the ability to analyze things, you know, and learning. We take things apart, we analyze them, and then we synthesize them, put them back together, at, you know, via what we have learned or what we understand about them. So it's discernment, and to see behind things, we call it today reading between the lines, and the discriminating ability to make decisions in light of that. This is the first verse 2 that we've just gone through. Then in verse 3, to receive, again, the word for chastening and instruction is used, which was used up there in verse 2, to know wisdom and instruction. And then it is to receive musar, the chastening and discipline idea, same word, in wise dealing. So there is a connection between not only knowing how to handle things, but to continue to receive or take a hold of or grasp or seize the instruction, the musar, the chastening and discipline. And that's that, by the way, is such a huge topic, but it is, I think, understandable to all of us. So this is so that one might prosper. In wise dealing, actually has the idea of prospering. But it's not just prospering like you might initially think of prospering, but it's prospering in tzedakah, righteousness, what's right, what's just. And then the next word is mishpat, which is judgment, which is a little different than righteousness. Righteousness is about justice. And the word justice, as it's, you know, translated here in verse 3 in the ESV, is really the word judgment, decision, you know, like a legal case or in an order, orderly fashion. So you're prospering as you receive instruction in righteousness, and your judgment becomes right, and equity. Equity, of course, means equity. It is the idea of being fair and, you know, not necessarily doing what somebody feels is fair, but what is actually fair. So wisdom's connection with a prudent life, verse 3, shows a practicality. And the word suggests, I guess, what we would call having good sense. Prudence in verse 4, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. Prudence in verse 4 is a little bit different because it is a different word, and it means shrewdness. Now, when you think of shrewdness, you may also go to another time and another place and remember that this word is used in Genesis 3:1, where it says that the serpent was more crafty or more shrewd. And that's the bad sense, but in Proverbs 22:3, the prudent sees danger and hides himself, but the simple go on and suffer for it. So this is both good and bad, and the word is, you know, it's not necessarily going to have bad or good inherent conditions in itself, but it has to do with the way that shrewdness is applied, I guess, or the context. So knowledge, then, let's see in verse 4, to give prudence or shrewdness to the simple. That is the inexperienced person. That would be, of course, Adam and Eve. Eve in particular, naive they were, and didn't know that somebody was out to get them. So it gives shrewdness to the people who are inexperienced. I got to go a little more quickly here. The knowledge in verse 4 is da'at, which is knowledge and cognition. It gives them much more knowledge than they had. It refers to knowing facts, knowing people, but it overlaps with this idea of linking theory with practice. You know, you have a concept, and now you know how to put it into play, into practice, and into life, into your experience. Discretion, mezima, is purpose, device, or discretion. And this particular word is... This word discretion refers to, or suggests, I guess, the practical person knows how to get things done, isn't put off by a problem. And again, in the bad or negative sense, it can mean scheming. So on to verse 5, learning. Let the wise hear and increase in learning, lekach. Teaching, understanding, I think that goes without any real explanation. Increasing in learning, not stagnating, but always, moving forward, gaining more knowledge. The wise is those who are skillful, those who are wise, those who have wisdom. Let them hear, shema. This is the word that is... famous in Deuteronomy 6:4, hear, O Israel. So it means to listen to or even to hearken to. So grabbing onto something and being receptive to something that is classified as wisdom. The same word is translated as persuasive words in a striking context in Proverbs 7:1. With much seductive speech, she persuades him. With her smooth talk, she compels him. Guidance comes from the word and suggests skill in steering your way through life's storms. Proverbs 24:6 says, for by wise guidance you can wage your war, and in abundance of counselors there is victory. So the book's introduction specifies its audience, the ones who are the simple, those would be uninstructed youth who are naive, gullible, easily, roped in. And happy the way they are, moving from gullibility to wisdom. But Proverbs' teaching is not something that the wise and the discerning grow out of. The word, verse 5 is pretty clear. Let them, the wise, hear and increase in learning. Not just the youth, the gullible, those who don't have any wisdom whatsoever. And I don't mean to imply that they don't, but I'm just saying those that don't are fitting into that. So those people have need to grow and to gather more wisdom and knowledge and learning. A further target will appear in verse 22. The mockers, they are the ones who need to close their mouths and open their ears. They need to know what's true and what's not, because they make fun of what is true, and they do that to their great peril. So this is just the beginning. And the fear of the Lord is, I would add the word, just the beginning of knowledge. This is what is first, beginning, in an ordinal way, and even in a priority sort of a way. It's the beginning of da'at, or knowledge, or cognition. Fools will not treat it that way. They will despise it. So I'm going to leave it there today, and hope that you have a good rest of your week until we see each other again on Sunday, Lord willing. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance on you and give you shalom, or peace.